Welcome. I want to welcome you to episode 424 of the Unpopular Podcast. This is the man, the myth, the legend, Jalen Hunter. Here at the Unpopular Podcast, I only ask to agree with me, I'm asking you to hear me out. Last episode, I started with the topic of reevaluation. I said that at the end of every season, for every team in every sport, there is a level of reevaluation. You have to evaluate how you look during the season. You have to evaluate where you finish at the end of the season compared to what your goals were. And you have to evaluate how close you are to your goals if you didn't ultimately reach your goals a season before. And we were talking about the NBA playoffs, and we were talking about the Phoenix Suns in particular, and how not only when you lose in the first round, when you're projected to make a deep playoff run, do you have to reevaluate, and does the the following off season mean so much more because of how far away from the goal you really are? But I talked about in the reevaluation stage blame, and that's where we're going to start this episode with blame. And how blame, especially in the sports world, especially in the arena of sports, a lot of times doesn't get fairly distributed. And in the reevaluation process, that is where you're supposed to distribute blame, some good, some bad. But that's when you're supposed to take accountability for where you are, where your team is, how you play as a player, how you are as a coach, how you are as an owner. If you did not reach your goal, or if you weren't close to reaching your goal, this is the time, the off season, the reevaluation period. The talk of all this season, because the season's still going on, because we're still in the playoffs. The talk this season was about the Phoenix Suns and their newly formed quote-unquote Big Three, with Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker. And when you hear those three names, it allows you to turn a blind eye to some glaring red flags about other things attached to the situation. Because basketball is about talent. Let's not get it confused here. Basketball is about talent. You collect the most amount of talent and you hope to get the best out of said talent, which is why people have so much high hopes for Team USA, because we compiled we compiled the most talented American players to hopefully capture a gold medal. So when you get three players that are all NBA players, that have potential, that have the skill to possibly be in the Hall of Fame one day, it allows you to turn it causes some people to turn a blind eye to other things that they should pay attention to. The headline is Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal, and Devin Booker are on a team. You automatically assign the title Big Three, and you automatically think, well, their ceiling, their goal is championship. Kevin Durant's one of the greatest offensive players we've ever seen. Devin Booker is one of the best ISO players we've ever seen. Bradley Beal is up there when we talk about ISO players and scores of the ball that we've ever seen. When we talked about the Milwaukee Bucks, Giannis and Dame, what's one of the main parts that I said could derail this team? Not just losing a Drew Holiday, losing a Grayson Allen, but the coach. Fit, and I've even titled the episode about this, fit does matter. Not just for players, but for coaches. You have to put the right people in charge to maximize your team. And when you get three players that's making almost north of $50 million a year, and you bargain your entire future for these three players, for essentially this team that you have, you better be damn sure that the coach that you pick is able to maximize the players that you have. Long story less long, Frank Vogel, who was the coach that they appointed this 1 year, was fired. After 1 year, after essentially getting swept in the playoffs with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, and Bradley Beal, getting swept to the much better and more complete formed team in the Minnesota Timberwolves. Frank Vogel, who was obviously hired to be the coach, was fired. And this is why I'm focusing on the reevaluation period. I say this a lot about African-American coaches. And usually when I talk about African-American coaches, and I say this, it's usually in much different situations. But Frank Vogel, in this situation, was not put in the position to succeed. I know that sounds crazy when you think of the firepower, the three players in which I continue to name, but Frank Vogel was not put in a position to succeed. When you get three players like that, like I said before, it bodes expectation. And when I said that you have those three players, then it turns a blind eye to a couple things. One of those red flags was Frank Vogel. And I'm not saying Frank Vogel was a bad coach. He's obviously, I mean, I know people disrespect and people don't really talk or don't like, or people don't look at the bubble or the championship that the Lakers won in the bubble as respectable. Cool. But he still has a championship under his belt. And he still was the coach of that team. So when I talk about Frank Vogel, I don't say that Frank Vogel was a bad coach. Frank Vogel has been to the NBA Finals. He obviously won one. He's been to multiple conference championships, whether we talk about with the Indiana Pacers. So, he was an assistant. But what I'm saying is Frank Vogel is not a bad coach. So why I say that one of the red flags about this Suns team was Frank Vogel is because everyone has strengths and everyone has weaknesses. Excuse me. One of my strengths is talking about sports. You don't see me going on relationship podcasts. You don't see me going on, you know, vlogging my whole life. That's not a strength for me. There are other people that do have great podcasts that talk about relationships. Other people that have great podcasts that talk about life. That's just not my lane. So I would be uncomfortable in a sense. I would be out of my element if I were to go on a relationship type podcast and try to carry that. When you're the coach of a team, you hope that the team that you have bolds to your strengths. One reason why Frank Vogel was perfect for the Lakers as the Lakers coach in 2020 is because that team was full of smart, savvy defenders. Whether we talk about LeBron James, whether we talk about Anthony Davis, whether we talk about Rajon Rondo, whether we talk about Avery Bradley, whether we talk about Dwight Howard. All of them are defensive-minded players. And Frank Vogel is a defensive-minded coach. So Frank Vogel was the best person to get the best out of that team because he was able to lean on his strengths, which then bolstered the strengths of the team. Well, when you look at this Phoenix Suns team, this team is the void of defense. In fact, there's a stat that this team is historically one of the worst teams of all time in the fourth quarter. Frank Vogel, you hire a defensive-minded coach for an offensively driven team. And you... what do you expect from that? I understand. I guess I kind of see the logic. It's like, well, he can teach this team how to play defense. But quiet as it's kept, coaches aren't there to teach. They're there to make sure, well, at least in the NBA, they're there to make sure that you run sets. They're there to make sure that their game plan is executed. And another thing that you see with this period a lot is when a team doesn't meet the expectation that they think they would, again, blame has to go somewhere. And 9 times out of 10, you're going to blame the coach. You're going to put the blame on somebody that may or may not deserve it. Again, Frank Vogel, who has already proven himself as a good coach, didn't not tell them to play defense. Did not tell Bradley Beal to score 9 points in game 4 and foul out. I just think it's unfortunate that a lot of the red flags that we saw, a lot of them weren't Frank Vogel. And then you see people talking about, you know, they didn't like his offense. They thought that, you know, Kevin Durant was not comfortable. Okay. Okay. If that is why you're going to fire Frank Vogel, cool. If he lost the locker room, if the players, you know, he lost a connection with the players, if the players were not listening to him, if he was trying to get his point across and it just wasn't equaling wins, cool. But again, when you have a defensive-minded coach, don't you think it would benefit him to get... Bro, do you realize the only defender on this team, or the only two defenders on this team, is Grayson Allen and Josh Okogie? That's not doing much for you. And now Frank Vogel's out of the head coaching after 1 year. A NBA champion at the head coaching position only gets 1 year with the team. A team that was not built to succeed under him because they don't match. That's probably, Frank Vogel probably should have never had the job, and that's no offense to Frank Vogel, But kind of the same way I feel about Doc Rivers to a lesser extent, this team does not fit Frank Vogel's style. So why was he even hired in the first place? And now you see Mike Budenholzer is the head coach. They replaced Frank Vogel with Mike Budenholzer. Well, you know what Frank Vogel and Mike Budenholzer both have in common? One, they're NBA champions. And two, they're defensive-minded coaches. So, good luck with that. And for the people that say that it just feels like there's a carousel of coaches, that is true. And in business, that's one thing I'm learning about, because I'm not used to the corporate world. And as much as sports want to separate from it, especially when you talk about front offices, especially when you talk about how things are run, basketball is very much corporate, especially when we talk about hirings and firings of coaches and GMs and front office personnel. So it's about relationships. And one coach that we knew wasn't going to be off the market for long was Mike Budenholzer, who has won an NBA championship with the Milwaukee Bucks. But again, this is kind of why I say that the future is not too bright for the Suns, because it doesn't seem like, and again, I hope Mike Budenholzer succeeds. I hope Bradley Beal succeeds. I hope Kevin Durant succeeds. I hope Devin Booker succeeds. I would like to, I don't care if they win a championship or not, but I do want them to succeed. But I want everyone to be put in the best position to succeed. And again, you can feel how you feel about Mike Budenholzer. You can feel how you feel about Frank Vogel. But both of them are defensive-minded coaches, and you don't have a defensive-minded team. So don't be surprised. I'm not saying they're going to get swept again, but don't be surprised if we look up next season and we're having these same type of conversations about the Phoenix Suns, especially if they don't reach their ultimate goal. And when you build a team with Kevin Durant, Devin Booker, Bradley Beal as your three pillars, you best believe that the expectation, the goals, the, let's say, the target is an NBA championship. And if you, I'm not saying you have to hit it, I'm not saying that you're going to, but if you don't get close, like this year, they didn't win a game in the playoffs. Or if you look up again next year and they don't make it out the first round, best believe it, there's going to be yet another reevaluation period. Speaking of reevaluation period, let's move forward and talk. I'm going to have, spoiler alert, I'm about to have a conversation with you guys that I've had a conversation with you guys with. So if you want to skip through this, the timestamps are down below if you don't want to hear me regurgitate some of the same talking points that I've said before. I completely understand. Timestamps are down below. Every single year, there is controversy surrounding the NBA MVP. And all of it is because of the NBA and how they've handled this award for years now. Let me first say that I think Nikola Jokic was deserving of the MVP. This year, they gave it to the best player. He is the best player in the NBA. And this year, they gave it to the best player in the NBA. I have no problem with that. If that is always going to be their criteria. Because if that is always going to be their criteria, if their criteria is always going to be the MVP goes to the best player, then I understand in Nikola Jokic deserves the MVP. Because he is the best player in the NBA. But the issue that we face, the issue that the NBA faces, is that that is not always the criteria. The criteria changes every single year. Because if you ask me, in my opinion, the MVP is somebody that takes their team to heights that is unexpected and still ranks high amongst the NBA greats that are playing today. Which, that criteria has been applied for several occasions. So while I believe that Giannis is good, while I believe that Nikola Jokic deserves the MVP if they are going to give it to the best player, if I had a vote this year, which obviously I don't, if I had a vote this year, it would go to Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. Because what Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has done is he's taken a team that had little expectations this year. He's taken a team that if you look at their age, it is comparable to a college team. If you look at their team, they have so many first-round draft picks for years to come because they're planning for the future, not the now. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander took that team and brought them in the West, that is widely renowned as the tougher conference, took that Thunder team to number one. On top of that, he's amongst the league leaders in scoring. Not the league leader in scoring, but amongst the league leaders in scoring. And he is the most important piece to this Thunder team. This Thunder team. A Thunder team, which we will talk about later, that is currently in the second round of the playoffs. The reason why this conversation is even able to be had is because of the inconsistency of this award. Because if you look back at history, this award has been inconsistent since the dawn of it. Because think about it. Michael Jordan didn't win the MVP every single year he was playing, which means that it doesn't always go to the best player. LeBron James didn't win the MVP every single year he was playing, especially in his prime, because I guess that means it doesn't go to the best player. Well, if it goes, well, if you look at some of Nikola Jokic's MVPs, his team wasn't the number one seed. So obviously it doesn't go to the player that is the MVP of their team. Because if that's the case, Jason Tatum would have some consideration. Obviously, rankings or your team ranking doesn't matter, right? Because again, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander took a team that nobody expected to be as good as they are. He took them to the number one seed. And if I understand they have Jalen Williams, I understand they have Chet Holmgren. Best believe, if you took Shai Gilgeous-Alexander off this team, they would be damn near a lottery team. Same thing with Jalen Brunson and the Knicks. You take Jalen Brunson off that team, the Knicks are a lottery team, especially when you see the injuries that they dealt with all year. The NBA will continue to have issues around this award if they continue to not have solid criteria to who should win, because every single year is different. So again, if you want to say that the MVP goes to the best player in the league, then yes, Nikola Jokic definitely deserves it, because he is the best player in the NBA right now. And that is only, obviously it probably would have gone to Joel Embiid if he wasn't hurt and he didn't miss that game play threshold. But if you ask me, and if you go by some of the winners that have won the MVP before, like a Kevin Durant when he was with OKC, like a Steph Curry when he at Golden State, like some of these other, Derrick Rose for the Bulls, winning the MVP at 25. If you're going to go by who was the most important player, who exceeded expectations, who took their teams to heights that we didn't see and was the MVP for that team, then it is for damn sure Shea Gilgeous-Alexander, in my opinion. Because you know what? You know what precedent this sets? It sets such an ugly precedent. Because now you look at Shea Gilgeous. What is Shea Gilgeous going to say? You know how tough it is going to be for Shea Gilgeous to get back to this point? I'm not saying that he's not going to be great. But do you understand? Again, Joel Embiid probably was the MVP if he didn't get hurt. Let's hope he doesn't get hurt next year. Now, I'm not saying you award it to somebody because they're never going to be here again or there's a possibility that they don't get here again. But what I'm saying is, what metric says that this year, this season, Nikola Jokic has had a better season than Shea Gilgeous? What metric? Because the only metric I see is the name. Nikola Jokic is a better player than Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. That is it. Yeah, he has more rebounds, but he's also a center. Shea Gilgeous averages more points. And on top of that, Shea Gilgeous took his team higher than Nikola Jokic took his team. And might I add, Nikola Jokic's team is a defending championship team. Meaning, they're expected to be good. And Shea, and no disrespect to me saying this, but Shea is on a team with a bunch of kids. In NBA land, a bunch of kids. And they're number one in the West. And in the second round against the Mavericks. The NBA is going to always run into this problem because there is no guideline, there is no concrete rule that they go by to hand out these type of awards. Hell, it's not just MVP. You can talk about Defensive Player of the Year. Victor Wembanyama has more blocks and more steals than Rudy Gobert. Yet Rudy Gobert has won his fourth Defensive Player of the Year award. Until the NBA finally gets more consistent with handing this trophy out, you're always going to have situations like we had with Shaq the other day, talking to Nikola Jokic, which I kind of respect, I mean, I understand both points. Like, I respect that, you know, he wasn't, I'm not going to say he was bashing Nikola Jokic, but he was pretty much saying, like, he was, you know how some people would, I guess the phrase is smile on your face and then talk bad behind, you know, talk behind your back. I thought it would be hella weird and hella disingenuous if Shaq was pretty much saying, I believe Shea Gilgeous-Alexander won, and then 3 seconds later you're having an interview with Nikola Jokic talking about how great you are and how you deserve the MVP. I think that's kind of crazy. So I understand that he prefaced that, but then I also understand the corny side, like, you probably shouldn't have said that, you know? But again, this is the issue that we run into, and this is the issue that we will always run into. Because again, and lastly, I will say this, if you're giving the MVP to the best player in the league every year, then I have no problem saying that Nikola Jokic deserved his MVP this year. But you, NBA, don't give it to the best player every year. And you, NBA, are constantly inconsistent with how you hand this award out. Because if you talk about the player, or if you give the award to the player that has reached heights that we didn't expect to see, is amongst one of the best players in the league, has made a tremendous jump, and has their team with the best record in either conference, then I don't understand how you can justify not giving it to Shea Gilgeous-Alexander. And don't get me wrong, bro, Luka has an argument as well. Because Luka averages, you know, leads the league in scoring. Luka is, if you combine points, rebounds, and assist, I think he has the highest amongst, like, the highest total in NBA history, or one of the highest totals in NBA history this year. Yet and still, he finished third. And that's another thing. And I'm not going to elaborate on that, but Nikola Jokic won by like a landslide. And that is, I don't understand how that is even possible when you see the season that Shea Gilgeous has had. But hey, as disingenuous as it sounds, I truly mean it. Congratulations to Nikola Jokic for winning his third MVP, I think becoming the 9th player in NBA history to have 3 or more MVPs. Shouts out to you. Let's talk about what a playoff series does. The reason why I said maybe an episode or two ago that there's not really upsets in an NBA playoff series is because it's very hard to upset a team 4 out of 5 times. 9.9 times out of 10, the best team is going to win. I'm not saying that there aren't upsets, but what I'm saying is it's very rare that you get an upset in the NBA playoffs because the better team is always going to prevail. And that's another thing that people kind of hold too much weight into, and that is that number in front of the team. Their playoff seeding, their standing. Yes, I understand that one team is a 1 seed, one team is a 4 seed, one team is a 5 seed, one team is an 8 seed. And obviously, the 1 seed is definitely supposed to be better than an 8 seed. At the end of the day, when you're in a 7-game series, the better team is going to prevail no matter what number it is. When you look at a team like the Boston Celtics, and you see how dominant they've been all season, the question that kind of gets asked from obviously people outside of the fan base and outside of the team is, where is their weakness? How is a team going to beat this team four out of seven, if there is a way for this team to lose 4 out of 7 times, are they just that solid? Are they just that lethal? Are they just that much better than everyone? That's kind of how it was with the Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Golden State Warriors. There was really no weaknesses. They had defense. They had scoring. They had all-time players. They had a good coach. A lot of teams were just waiting them out, just waiting for them to crumble. When you looked at this Boston Celtics team all season, the question was, yo, I don't know if there's any team that can beat them. But you know what a playoff series does? A playoff series exposes your weaknesses. Now, some teams have them, some teams don't. But every team, not every team in NBA history, but most teams in NBA history have a fatal flaw. Now, it's just, is the other team able to exploit that fatal flaw? That's what you learn in a 7-game series, and that is why it's very hard to find upsets in the NBA, because the NBA, these are the best basketball players in the world, meaning they are going to exploit your fatal flaw. Some teams are better at it than others, but still. Watching this playoffs, seeing how things are unfolding, Boston is the best team in basketball. Yes, that is even with the Minnesota Timberwolves playing as good as they are, with the Denver Nuggets having the 3-time MVP at this point. The Boston Celtics is the best team in basketball. But what this playoffs are showing is that fatal flaw. The fatal flaw that at first I didn't see how anyone can beat this Celtics team, but now I see it. You know why it's important, and you know why people say, what is your second punch? What is your second win? Because usually a good playoff team is going to take away your first option, or going to make your first option as a team incredibly difficult to get to, or incredibly difficult to lean on. That's one of the most underrated things about championship caliber teams. They have multiple counters, multiple hooks. Then I look at this Boston Celtics team. I'm not saying, I don't think. Now, yes, I thought that the Cleveland Cavaliers were going to get swept by the Boston Celtics. I was wrong about that, obviously. I still don't give the Cleveland Cavaliers a shot to win this series, but I was wrong about them getting swept. But the Boston Celtics have lost 2 games in this entire playoffs. They lost game two against Boston, or against the Heat, and they lost game 2 against the Cleveland Cavaliers. Both games had something in common. The Celtics did not shoot well from the three. The Celtics are one of, if not the best, three-point shooting team in basketball this year. I don't have those facts behind me, but I'm almost sure that shooting, like attempts, shooting percentage-wise at the three-point line, they are amongst the top. They shoot a lot of threes. And when you have someone like Jaylen Brown, who's improved his three-point shooting, Jason Tatum, who's improved his three-point shooting, Derek White, who's improved drastically his three-point shooting, Kristaps Porzingis, Drew Holiday, Sam Hauser, they can put the ball in the hole from three. But it's all about your second, your counter. What happens when a team is successful in taking away your three-point shot, which the Cleveland Cavaliers and the Miami Heat were in both game twos of their series? As you see, the Boston Celtics don't have, or they have not shown to have a solid counter which could be a fatal flaw, especially when you play a team that is solid defensively, like a Minnesota Timberwolves. I'll say this. I think if the Minnesota Timberwolves beat the Denver Nuggets in this series, they're going to the NBA Finals. And I'll even say this. Now, obviously, when we get closer to the finals, I'll update everything. But if the Minnesota Timberwolves make the NBA Finals and they have to see this Boston Celtics team, I think I can go out on a limb and say that the Minnesota Timberwolves will win the NBA Finals. Because the Boston Celtics have not shown that they have a counter when they're not hitting the three. And that has been their fatal flaw for years now. Even with, don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about anything that happened off the court. Even with Ime Udoka as their head coach, Ime Udoka did bring a level of toughness, a level of intensity when we talk about the defense side of the ball. But as we saw with the Golden State series in the NBA Finals, when they weren't hitting shots, they weren't doing nothing. As we saw the year after, when you take away their three, when you boggle their best player, i.e. Jason Tatum, they don't have anything. As we saw last year when they got upset in the conference finals. Or no. When they got, I don't remember when it was, but when they got upset against the Miami Heat did a great job at taking their three-point shot away, and Jimmy Butler was just going crazy. What Cleveland did this year, or what Cleveland did in game two, let's say that, and what the Miami Heat did in game two of this year's playoffs is they've exposed that this Boston Celtics team isn't that much different than the Boston Celtic teams or the Boston Celtic teams of late. The issue is when you take away their punch, when you take away their haymaker, what do they have? And when you're going against a player that can put the ball on the ground and go get their own shot, i.e. Donovan Mitchell, it's going to be a tough day when they're not hitting threes. And maybe that's why a lot of people are saying, well, they cannot win a championship without Porzingis, because Porzingis opens the floodgates for a lot of people. And it makes it hard to double. But I still think that this Celtics team is the best team in basketball. Their fatal flaw has been revealed. A flaw that we haven't seen them have majority of this year. Obviously, they're not undefeated, but the playoffs is a completely different animal than the regular season. And the two games that they lost, they looked eerily similar. They got destroyed, and they, because they weren't hitting threes, was nothing. It just, the whole team wasn't connecting. Derek White, when Derek White doesn't go off, which is crazy to say, but when Derek White doesn't go off, he looks pedestrian. Jrue Holiday is one of the best on-ball defenders. Even when the three-point shots are not hitting, even his defense kind of takes a dip. And maybe that's why, because I was confused about something, man. Maybe that is the hesitation, the pause that people have from Jason Tatum. Because let's not get it confused. Jason Tatum has not had the best playoffs this entire playoff run. He's been good, but he has not looked like their best player. Jaylen Brown has had a better playoff series playoff run than him. Derek White has had a better playoff run than him. Now, obviously, he hasn't had to have it because, I mean, when you're playing against a Heat that is depleted, when you're playing against a team that you're essentially better than in the Cleveland Cavaliers, maybe you are coasting. But Jason Tatum, who was their best player by far, has not shown to be that this playoff run. And maybe that's the reservation that people have when, because I always wonder when we talk about MVP talks and when we talk about best players, how Jason Tatum's name very rarely gets brought up, and Jason Tatum has the skill set to be one of the best players. So we'll see. I think it's just one game. I obviously, again, was wrong about the Cleveland Cavaliers getting swept. But I don't think they have a shot of beating the Boston Celtics in the series. But shouts out to them for winning game two. Speaking of game two, let's talk about what we saw from the Oklahoma City Thunder and Dallas Mavericks series. There are things that you can dictate and there are things that you can't dictate in series. The things that you can't dictate, they're just going to happen. They just happen. You have to adjust when they happen. For instance, we just talked about Jason Tatum. Usually, the best player in the series, you're not going to be able to stop. Better, I know defense wins championships, but usually better offensive player, the better offensive player, it's kind of hard to stop. You're not stopping Nikola Jokic in a series. You're not stopping Luka Doncic in a series. You're not stopping, Donovan Mitchell in a series. He can struggle, but you're not going to stop him in a series. Those are the things that you just can't stop. Luka averaged 34 points a game this year. You think you're about to stop this man from scoring? That's just not happening. That is something you can't control. You just can't control it. You can try everything. They're going to get their points. Something that you can control is the others, the role players. I'm almost sure when the Oklahoma City Thunder have a chart and they have a playbook, they have a scouting, let's say, a scouting book, and they look at it, I'm sure one of the pages has to say Luka Doncic is going to get his. Kyrie Irving probably is going to get his. And nobody else can get theirs. Let's make it a point to stop everyone else, because Luka and Kyrie cannot beat us themselves if we play our best, right? That is why I think you saw the Dallas Mavericks win game two, because you saw the others. You saw PJ Washington. Nobody. You don't anticipate PJ Washington having 29 points. No offense to him. You don't think that at a certain point of the game, Tim Hardaway Jr., who has struggled all year accepting his role on the team, he is not going to score 12, 13 straight points. I don't even think Tim Hardaway has had a double-digit game this entire playoffs, let alone score 11, 12 straight points. And on top of that, you don't expect the Thunder to have as many turnovers as they had. Like, you can't expect that. So what I'm saying is, I don't think this series is as close as it looks. I think that the things that you can control got out of control. Like, PJ Washington, I don't think he's going to go for 29 again. I don't think he's going to hit, eight threes again. I just don't see that happening. I could be wrong. I just don't see it happening. I don't see Tim Hardaway damn near going for 20 points. Or maybe he had more than 20. In fact, let's see. I just don't see it happening. Because even in that, the Thunder still fought back every single time. It was just every single time the Thunder made a run, or let's say this, Dallas makes a run, Thunder make a run, Dallas makes a run, Thunder make a run. Every single time the Thunder make a run, there's a crucial point. Either it was a turnover, either it was a bad shot, either if it was a bad, it was an and one that Dallas converted. Every single time the Thunder looked like that they were there, looked like that they were starting to pull away, something critical happened that benefited the Dallas Mavericks. Now, don't get me wrong. On top of that, PJ went crazy. Tim Hardaway Jr. went crazy. Kyrie didn't even have the best game. I think he had a playoff career high in assist, or maybe tied a playoff career high, but he didn't even have the best game. I don't even think he scored more than 11 points. This is Kyrie Irving we're talking about, who is their second best player, second best scorer. Some would argue first best scorer on the team. You just don't foresee Tim Hardaway Jr. and PJ Washington being their second and best, second, actually first best scorer on the team. So I think it's going to be a good series. I don't think that the Thunder are light years better than the Mavericks, but I do think that after these first two games, I can comfortably say that the Thunder is a better team. They just let the controllables get away from them. And I expect to see more. I mean, Cachet was going crazy too. Jesus. I just expect to see more of what we've seen this entire play. I mean, again, this is the first game that they've lost, the Thunder. So, but I do think it's going to be a good series. And yeah, we'll see. Let's move forward. You know, I didn't think, you know, as a podcaster, as a sports guy, as someone that works in sports outside of the podcast, you hope that when you make content and you put it out to the world, you hope that that content not only reaches as many ears, as many eyes as it can reach, but it, I guess you could say it causes stir in a good way. I mean, obviously some people, all controversy is good controversy. I don't see that at all. I mean, I get the fact that you have people viewing your stuff and talking about yourself, but I think if you have, I get the whole, well, if they're talking about it, that means it's important. Well, what are they saying? You know, like, if you just spew out lies and hate and negativity, why do you want that to be attached to you? You know what I mean? But I do understand, and I do think that there is a level of want when you're a content creator for obviously people to talk about your stuff. And one thing that a lot of people were talking about that I said last episode was Jalen Brunson being a superstar or not. And again, I said that last episode that the answer to that question, your opinion is subjective. There are people, because I watched this all week. There are people that think that Jalen Brunson is the best Knick of all time. I'm not saying that they're wrong. I'm not saying they're right. But that has been this. There are people that think that Jalen Brunson is a better Knick than Carmelo Anthony, a better Knick than Patrick Ewing, you know? I'm not saying that they're wrong, but what I'm saying is that's their opinion. There are people that think that Jalen Brunson is the best point guard in the league right now. Hell, they just asked Draymond Green that, and Draymond Green said, no, Steph Curry's still in the league. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander's still in the league. Luka Doncic, you know, these are all subjective questions. What was not subjective is the New York Knicks are up 2-0 against the Indiana Pacers. And this series is teaching you one vital lesson. if you're a Pacers fan. The reason why they say defense wins championships is because you can always lean on your defense. I'm not saying that today's NBA, you only have to have defense. But what I'm saying is, one thing that you can always lean on, if your shot's off, if you have a lot of turnovers, if you're just no one's hitting that game, what you can always lean on is defense, which is why they say defense wins championships, because that's the one thing that you can always dictate. The biggest issue with the Indiana Pacers is they do not play defense. Outside of Miles Turner, they don't play defense. They are such a offensive run machine. Now, granted, that offense did get them to the second round of the playoffs. But you see what happens when your best player in Tyrese Halliburton is inconsistent from the three, or is inconsistent when shooting the ball. You see what happens when your second best player, Miles Turner, isn't really getting his shots, or you're turning the ball over a lot as a team. And then you have another team that just plays scrappy and plays defense. The reason why I brought up the conversation with Jalen Brunson and what I was talking about is you can debate if he's a superstar or not. You can debate whatever you want to debate. What should be indisputable, what should be undebatable, is his importance to this team. And he has been the best player on this Knicks. Let's just shrink the sample. This series. Now, obviously, he was the best player last series, but we're just talking about this series. And the reason why you see the Pacers in this position is when kind of the same thing with the Boston Celtics, but to a lesser extent. When your first punch does not land, when your haymaker ain't haymakering, what is your counterpunch? What's your second punch? Boston, you could say their second punch is, all right, well, we're going to lean on our best player. We're going to lean on Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. They both play really good on-ball defense. We can lean on our defense. Even though they haven't done it, that's what you can point. They have great defenders on the team. Jrue Holiday, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, Porzingis at the rim. They have Derek White as a really good defender. They have defensive-minded players. When you look at the Pacers, they do not. They just don't. The New York Knicks are taking away their haymaker. And now you're seeing in real time them struggling to figure out how to counter. Because it goes back to what I say all the time. See, people don't listen to me. You know what I'm saying? If people listen to me, I don't think I'm the smartest mind in the world. But if people listen to me, especially when we talk about basketball, as much basketball as I watch, as much basketball as I play, as much basketball as I've played in my life, if people listen to me, I think that they think things would be a little better. It goes back to consistency, and it goes back to the tendencies that you built in the regular season. The Indiana Pacers have built an offensive just machine in the regular season. Hasn't really looked at the defense that much because they don't have defensive players. Well, what do you know? You have not developed a defensive-minded mentality all season. It's just been offense, offense, offense. In fact, when you look at every single scouting report for the Indiana Pacers, the key to victory is speed the game up and just do a track meet because that's how they win. Well, if they have not developed a winning formula on the defensive side of the ball all season, what do you think is going to happen when you take away their offense? They look lost out there a lot of times. Now, they're not getting destroyed, but they look lost. Which is why I am supremely confident. Again, if I'm wrong, I'll come in here and say I'm wrong. But I am supremely confident that they are not walking out of this series. And that is the Indiana Pacers. You don't have the best player. You're not playing the best. And the other team is taking away your superpower. So what are you doing? And on top of that, Pascal Siakam ain't even, he hasn't played up to snuff. And you can argue that's your best player. Or you can say Tyrese Halliburton, who hasn't really been consistent shooting the ball. Yeah, man. Yeah. It's interesting. Again, I'm not going to talk about the Minnesota Timberwolves and Denver because as I'm shooting this, the game hasn't happened yet. We will talk about it probably Wednesday, you know. But yeah, those are some things I've seen with the playoffs. And yeah, it's been a very interesting playoffs. Fun. Glad to say that. Lastly, before we go, you have the unpopular topic of the day. And it's always interesting when you sit back and listen to people's concerns, people's frustrations, people's issues with things. And if you just sit back and listen, be slow to speak, quick to listen. That's biblical. This has been a very interesting week for the WNBA. So, at the top of the week, it was announced that the WNBA will now be chartering planes for the entire season or for the every team. I think they have a partnership now with Delta. And before, I think they were only chartering planes in the playoffs after round one, I believe. Now they're doing it for the entire season. I'm not going to be the one to be like, it should have been. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to say that that's what they announced. And I think Thursday or Friday, they announced that they will be expanding a team in Toronto, Canada. Their first team is overseas. Now, I started this segment with, it's very interesting to listen to people's plights, people's issues. And the interesting part isn't that they have issues. The interesting part is how they view things and how their view has formed their opinion. Because when we're talking about, when they announced the charter planes and they announced the team in Toronto and everything, you see a divide. You see players that are happy, that are ecstatic about it, and fans that are happy, ecstatic, saying, damn, the league is finally taking heed and the league is finally taking a care to their players' place as far as travel and transportation and, you know, understanding how important a comfortable transportation is in terms of the performance, you know, and caring about their players enough to put the money down to allow chartered planes. and I've been saying this a while now, one airline should partner with the WNBA, and it looks like it's going to be Delta, so shout out to them. So one side, you see people that are ecstatic about it and are pretty much waving the, you know, finally flag. This is finally happening. Then you have the other side. And that other side, people are happy that obviously this is happening, but people are also upset as to why. Because let's not get it twisted. A lot of this, I'm not going to say the Toronto thing. I'm going to say most of the charter planes is probably because of Caitlin Clark. Caitlin Clark can't be walking. Caitlin Clark can't walk through Reagan National Airport. Caitlin Clark ain't walking through Dulles. Caitlin Clark ain't walking through Bradley. 9 times out of 10, the main reason why the league is charting these planes now is because of Caitlin Clark. And a lot of people are upset with the fact of they feel she's getting extra treatment that other people deserved before her. It's like one argument here is, well, why are they doing this for Caitlin Clark, but they didn't do this for Breonna Stewart, but they didn't do this for Maya Moore, but they didn't do this for Candace Parker, but they didn't do this for Tamika Catchings, but they didn't do this for Lisa Leslie, but they didn't do this for Skylar Diggins, but they didn't do this for Asia Wilson. And my my response to that is, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I think that all of them are much deserved when we talk about their game is so good that it should warrant change. I think that all of them are, hell, Candace Parker just retired and became the, I think, creative director of Adidas. So shouts out to her. But they're absolutely right, you know? Like, Candace Parker's game, Breonna Stewart is arguably the most decorated WNBA player we've ever seen. She has 4 national championships, and she has multiple WNBA championships. So in that sense, I get it. You're right. It is crazy that it took Caitlin Clark for all this change to happen. But I will also say, but shouldn't we be happy that change has finally come? Shouldn't we be happy that, yes, you may not like why it happened, but it happened. You see, I hear what everyone says. I may not respond all the time, but I hear what everyone says. And I'm not the only person that has scoffed at the WNBA. Hell, I made a whole segment about it before, saying how the WNBA can be better. And what was the one thing that I said? Yo, why don't we have private plan? Why is there a situation where I can be on the same plane as a WNBA champion in season? So I guess what I'm trying to say is, man, you can feel how you feel about Caitlin Clark and the fandom and the way that the WNBA is wrapping their arms around Caitlin Clark, and how there is, you can literally see change happening because Caitlin Clark is in the league. So you can be upset with that if you want. Cool. But I'll come back and saying, isn't that what we asked for as WNBA fans? Isn't that what we asked for? Didn't we ask for change? Didn't we ask for improvement? And now that we're getting it, we don't like why it's happening? I think the WNBA is in a great place right now. It's in a thriving state right now. And the fact that you see two expansion teams coming, one in the Golden in the Bay, or no, one in Golden State and one now in Toronto, should show you. And the one in Toronto, do you know how expensive that is going to be? It should show you that the leagues, and this is after years and years and years of arguing that why are all these draft picks getting waived weeks after they just got drafted? Why are you unable to hold 15 players? Why is there three draft rounds and usually everyone in round three gets waived? So when you hear that, and then now you're hearing expansion, two new teams, and you're hearing finally the one of the biggest black eyes for the league was the way that they handled transportation. And now you see that it's getting better. You're upset because of why? Yes, I think that all those players that came before Caitlin Clark are incredible players. Maya Moore is my GOAT when we talk about greatest basketball player of all time. But it didn't happen with them. It happened with Caitlin Clark. And as much as you want to be upset about who caused change, I'm happy that change finally has come. And I hope that even if it is on the back of Caitlin Clark, I hope more change and more improvement for a league like the WNBA continues to happen, even if it's because of Caitlin Clark. And there you have it. That's been today's episode of the Popular Podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you guys. If you want a Popular Podcast shirt, hoodie, sweater, long sleeve, joggers, the link is in the description below. I have multiple different colors, multiple different designs. Get your Unpopular Podcast merch today. Also, please subscribe to the YouTube channel. I appreciate everyone that has subscribed. I appreciate everyone that's going to subscribe. I appreciate everyone that supports. If you like the content, if you're an hour and 12 minutes in and you still haven't subscribed, I don't know what to tell you, bro. If you like the content, tell a friend to tell a friend to tell a friend to subscribe. It definitely means a lot. Also, I understand that some people just watch me on YouTube. Some people listen to me on DSPs, whether that's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, wherever you listen to your DSPs. I completely appreciate you guys. If you do listen on DSPs and you're not following or you're not subscribed, please do that. It definitely, definitely means a lot. I appreciate everyone. Oh, shoot. I'm sorry. I appreciate everyone that supports me. So please subscribe. It means so much to me. Also, follow the socials, follow Instagram, follow TikTok. I pretty much post there daily, whether that's stories, whether that's reels, whether that's discussions. That is probably the quickest way to get to me. We can debate. You can tell me how much you love my content. You can tell me how much you hate my content. Hey, that is probably the best place to get to me. We'll debate. I love talking to people that listen, people that support. So follow the socials. And until next time, I hope you guys have a fantastic weekend. Much love.